we don't know who to trust. We don't know who's lying to us. The other side thinks they're being told the truth, and the people we listen to, we believe they're telling us the truth. Somebody's lying. We got to figure out who is.
Maybe both is happening at the same time.
Hey guys, I'm John. It's 2020. This is Radical Empathy. Today's episode is a little personal. We are going to be talking to my parents.
Thank you guys so much for releasing this. I get it, and it just means a lot. I like this podcast. I'm white, but I don't know. It's just I agree with you say, and it means a lot. Thank you guys so much.
I can relate to a lot of the feelings that I hear in that person's voice. It's been a really confusing past month for all of us, and it's been pretty difficult to navigate the maze of social issues and political issues and health issues that we've been presented with. More specifically, I've also just been feeling conflicted about my own whiteness. But one thing I thought might be helpful is to have a conversation with my parents about what they think of race. And this episode today is really about stories, the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we were raised with regarding identity and race and politics in this country. Oh yeah, and religion as well. We do jump around quite a bit in this episode, but I think it's all leading to an important destination, so stick with me, and here we go.
Hello?
Hey.
Okay.
Did you get my email?
Just got it. So now, what do I do?
So click you should just click on that link.
Your app version needs to be 5.0 or higher.
Oh, update. Did... Yeah, just update it real quick. Do you know the password?
What password are we doing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it should be your Apple ID password, I think.
Password. Oh, okay. Can you see me?
Oh, I see you. You're here. I'm going to let you in.
Hi, John.
Hey, Dad, how are you doing? I haven't seen you.
I'm doing good. I didn't get sick.
Yeah.
Or maybe I did, and I was asystemic or whatever.
Asymptomatic.
Yeah, I poured a glass of wine just so that I can stay calm.
Maybe you ought to go get me one.
Can I have a glass of bourbon, John?
I won't tell anybody if you won't. So you guys are my mom and dad, and I just want to start off by saying that I love you guys.
We love you, or I love you.
I love you, and no matter what I say, I will always love, or what you say.
I want to talk because a lot is going on right now, and I want to record it and just see if it might be helpful, because the things that we disagree about are probably really common, right?
Yes.
So I just want to talk it through, and I'm going to do my best to ask you guys questions more than tell you what I think, and just be honest. You don't have to be afraid of offending me, and you don't have to say things that you don't feel are true. Does that sound good?
Okay, let's go for it. Let's see how far we get.
Why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Kathy, and I was born in Torrance, California. I'm 63 years old. I currently live in Broomfield, Colorado, and that's where you were raised, John.
Yep, that's right.
And I'm Rick Regalado, Kathy's husband, also from California, Torrance, and I'm 67.
What year were you guys born?
I was born in 56.
1953.
So that was just like 10 years after World War II? Something like that?
Yeah.
So you guys have lived through a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
You like Ike, I like Ike, everybody likes Ike.
For president.
You can give your youngsters a lot of pleasure with Kool-Aid. It has the Parents Magazine seal.
Exhausted GIs grab 40 weeks.
You've seen like stuff with communism and like the Cold War.
And the Reds may be back at any time.
Vietnam War.
We are going to win.
First man on the moon.
Yeah, I'm going to step off the land now.
Kennedy was assassinated on my 7th birthday.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I remember we had to get under our desks. They would put an alarm on over the speaker at school, and we had to get under our desks and cover.
I am submitting today a resolution to the Security Council designed to find a way out of this calamitous situation.
And I remember playing outside on my lawn when an airplane flew over. I couldn't differentiate whether it was going to bomb me or if it was just a plane. I mean, I remember those thoughts as a kid.
So, of all of the things that you guys have lived through, where would what we're going through right now rank? What do you think?
Worst.
And
this is the worst.
I agree.
And can you guys explain why it feels that way to you?
Because we're so polarized. One half of the country sees things one way, and the other half sees things the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who to trust. We don't know who's lying to us. The other side thinks they're being told the truth. And the people we listen to, we believe they're telling us the truth.
Mm-hmm. Did your guys' views of the world change as like you grew up and through these events?
There were always racial crises from time to time, you know, mixing schools, kids from different backgrounds, cultures, and races coming together. That was intimidating, but those were worthwhile events that created the world we're in right now. So they were good, and attitudes have changed. Mm-hmm. But for some, apparently not enough.
Did you guys ever argue with your parents about those political events or like which side you were on or if they were good or bad?
No, my dad was a Democrat growing up, but later in life, he became a Republican. He became very angry with the Democratic Party because they were changing too much, moving away from what he believed in.
When
my dad died young, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have had a lot of arguments about politics, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember any time in your life where you changed like your beliefs or your political views really strongly?
Well, when I was a kid, I always thought that freedom, the idea of freedom, personal freedoms belonged to the Democrats. And then when I got older, I realized I was totally wrong, that they were opposed to personal freedoms. And I found the Republicans were the defenders of our freedom. So I switched. And I think all young people start out that way. They start out leaning towards what they think is progressive. And at the end of their life, they find out it was oppressive, not progressive.
Do you have any specific memories of like when you shifted? Was it a president or an event or anything like that?
I think it all started when you were born, John, when we started having a family. Things mattered to you. Yeah, how's this going to affect the kids? How is this going to affect Kathy? How's this going to affect the community, my neighborhood, my neighbors? All of a sudden, those things become really important, because when you're by yourself, you don't have to worry too much about that. But later, when other people, you're responsible for them, it becomes real important. And you worry about their future. And now it's our grandkids. We're worried about them. What kind of world will they grow up in? Will they ever know the Pledge of Allegiance, or will that be outlawed? Will they ever know Christmas songs? Will those be outlawed? Will they recall anything about the world we live in now? Will progressive ideas replace the entire culture and replace it with something, an ideology that's oppressive?
One thing that scares me, I remember growing up learning about book burnings and, squelching the difference, the opposing point of view. And I feel like that is where we're going with the tech companies and their ability to censor what is on YouTube. And I know it's their right, it's a private company and all, but it frightens me, gone with the wind. You know better than anybody that I exposed you to wonderful movies growing up of all different types. And, HBO took it down because the way they depicted slavery in the movie. And slavery is bad no matter how it's depicted. But the movie is just about a time and a place.
Mm-hmm.
That's our culture. That's who we are. That's how we came to be, whether it was right or wrong. It's still our history. Erasing history doesn't make history go away. It means you're more vulnerable to the future. You can't learn from the past.
Yeah. I guess let's segue into race now. Did you guys talk about racism with your family growing up? Was that something that was dealt with?
I really wasn't that exposed to different races from what I recall, even though California, where I grew up, has changed a lot now.
It was always talked about at school. I went to school in a different area. We had about 20% black kids at our school. It was the start of integration.
Was that because you guys lived in a more diverse neighborhood? And Dad, do you consider yourself white? Because you're technically mixed race. You're technically half Filipino.
Yeah, but it's more convenient to be called a Caucasian. It just solves a lot of problems.
Because you look you look white, but you do have darker skin than you.
Well, it may be just, Spanish, Filipino, and all that. And no, neighborhood had nothing to do with it for me. But the school did, and that's where we got to know the black community. I was frightened of them at first. I was scared like everyone. My first knowledge of black people came with the riots in L.A., and so I figured that black people were violent, angry, and threatening.
By riots, you're talking about the Watts.
Yeah.
Some people call it riots, some people call it the rebellion, but we're talking about the same incident, right? In Watts. Right.
They were tired of living in substandard situations, so it was a rebellion. But I do remember seeing some things on TV, but I was awfully young to even begin to fathom what was going on.
August the 11th, 1965, the bloodiest riot in 40 years of America's troubled racial history begins. Los Angeles, California, the district called Watts. 34 persons die, $40 million.
This is audio from a news segment that was aired on ABC in 1966. It's called The Face of Watts. It's essentially just interviews with black residents of the Watts area in the aftermath of the uprising that happened there. My dad was about 13 years old when this was being filmed, and my mom was 10.
Give everybody a job, that's all. That's all any of us need is a job. See all us men standing out here? We don't need nothing but a job. You wouldn't see us out here.
It's very hard to try to explain to someone what it feels like to be black in a white world. The things that happen to you daily and that affect you and that are so much a part of you are very hard sometimes to even remember because they come so routine.
What bugs you the most?
white men.
All white men?
Not all. Just the one that's pushing the Negro.
And you've been pushed around by white men?
When I was younger, I was, but not now.
But you still remember this?
I still remember.
You think you're going to continue to be pushed around by white men?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because the Negroes are stepping up, they're waking up, and they're going to do something about what the white man did to them in the past.
And at that point in your guys' lives, had you seen black people?
We didn't see them a lot at church. We didn't see them at school. And only until I went into high school did I start seeing black people and talking to them. So no, didn't know who they were. I didn't know what they believed in. I didn't know anything. It was very intimidating. So it was good that our worlds melded together, but it was bad how it all came about.
When you see what's going on in the world right now, and I guess maybe let's start with like the piece of information that started this whole protest thing, which was that video of George Floyd with the police officer kneeling on his neck. How is that all coming into your brain?
Well, I think the protesters are preaching to the choir. There are few, if any, people who agree with what George Floyd suffered, and it was murder to just about everyone watching it. And
so you guys don't have any doubt that what you saw was
it was horrible. Everyone felt that it was not right, but I didn't expect what was going to happen after that. It seemed like George Floyd's murder was taken over by a group of people who wanted to take advantage of it and do something that expressed their own ideology. They didn't care about George Floyd. All they were interested in was looting and stealing and rioting and destroying and creating anarchy, which nobody agrees with.
I believe the protests were hijacked by groups that have a different agenda.
I think we are seeing political groups like Black Lives Matter taking the reins of the momentum and trying to sort of lobby in a very public way through these protests for drastic political change to how law enforcement is handled, specifically in communities like, you know, South Central LA, where black men are arrested on a very regular rate and encounter violence with police.
Yeah.
Are you sympathetic to something like that?
John, when we were growing up, the black community was calling out for representation in as governors, as mayors, as senators, et cetera. They wanted to get into government, and they were mad because they didn't have representation. But now they are the chief of police. Now they are the mayors. Now they run the cities, and they still have problems. And what Black Lives Matter is about is really more power.
What Black people need are better schools. They need more opportunity. They need to be able to lift themselves up through business opportunities and such. They don't need Black Lives Matter to portray them, their whole race.
So you guys think Black Lives Matter is poorly representing the black community?
Yes.
And why?
Because they want to govern by fear.
If we don't have police, it's going to be the person with the most guns. Who's going to have, who's going to be in charge?
I hear what you're saying, that it is scary when a whole large crowds of people are taking to the streets and they're extremely angry and they're demanding things change really quickly and they're demanding things that seem kind of unheard of prior to the moment. But I guess, wouldn't you guys say that that is something that's happened a lot in history?
No.
And how come?
This isn't comparable at all to anything that was noble in the past. This is rooted in anarchy. This is rooted in evil. This isn't rooted in righteousness and worthy causes. People aren't aspiring to a higher society for everyone. They're aspiring a society that can dictate and
dominate
everyone else.
This was the point in my conversation with my parents where it became difficult for me to understand where they were coming from. And that's part of why this moment feels like such a crisis. We don't agree what the picture is that we are looking at. So I thought it'd be good to take a break from my conversation with them and rewind to another time in American history when there was a crisis going on. I did some more digging through YouTube and I found this amazing documentary called Crisis in Levittown. The focus of this documentary is around a family called the Myers family. They were a black family that was moving into a white suburban neighborhood, and they were the very first black family to move into that neighborhood. This documentary is also just interviews with some of the white residents in the town, and it's very interesting to hear the differences in perspectives and how they interpret that moment.
Became the main topic of conversation for the people of Levittown within a few hours of their arrival. In the absence of fact and authoritative information on a situation like this, rumor and gossip sweep through the community.
Oh, I heard lots of rumors. I was busy telling people not to believe them.
What kind?
Well, that they'd been sponsored. Chiefly, I think people resented, after they heard this rumor and believed it, they resented feeling that some outside group had deliberately moved these people in, and I had been told on good authority that that wasn't true at all, and so I told people that it wasn't true. I have great faith in the people here, and that they'll soon find out there's nothing to be afraid of.
Some view the incident calmly and indicate acceptance of the fact, but for others, the Myers moving into Levittown constitutes an infringement of their own liberties. And under the impact of this situation, they react with anger and force. What they say reveals their deepest fears and frustrations. Why did you select Levittown to live?
We were looking for a place to buy a home. We looked at Levittown, and we liked the homes here. We liked the advantages that Levittown seemed to offer in comparison to other cities. And we understood that it was going to be all white, and we were very happy to buy a home here.
Do you think a Negro family moving here will affect the community as a whole?
Definitely.
In what way?
I think that, well, the property values will immediately go down if they are allowed to move in here in any number. The whole thing centers around the word integration. He's got three children. And evidently he feels that they will be accepted socially. And I don't feel that they ever will be. But the whole trouble with this integration business is that in the end, it probably will end up with mixing socially. And you will have, well, I think their aim is mixed marriages and becoming equal with the whites. But the only way they're going to do that is by education and by bettering themselves, not by pushing in the way they have here.
What's so interesting about that documentary is it was filmed in 1957. That was 1 year after my mom was born. What's also interesting about the past is we can see two very clear sides, the people who we think were right and the people who we think were wrong. It's amazing how time reveals to us what is true and where people were coming from. But in the moment, it is often difficult to acknowledge where we are coming from.
When it started, Antifa, or Antifa, or however people say it.
Yeah, I think it's Antifa, anti-fascist.
But they're fascists.
But they're not really against fascism. They're against capitalism. They're pro-communist. If you'll notice, most of them are white, and they dress in black. So you can't even see who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been documented that they delivered bricks and rocks to certain points during the initial riots.
Have you seen these bricks that people have been finding at all these different sites where people are protesting?
Uh-uh.
These organized stacks of bricks.
No.
This is a recent clip from the Joe Rogan Experience. It's a very popular podcast, and he's talking about these mysterious bricks that my mom was also concerned about.
It's like, who is putting that? Is it Antifa? Is it the cops?
So let me ask a question. Do you guys think that Antifa and Black Lives Matter are working together, that they're in partnership?
Yes, I do.
I'm not so sure.
They have common causes.
I don't think they organize together.
I don't believe they organize events together, but they show up together and they both have the same philosophy. Opposing views are not tolerated. You cannot speak what's on your mind. They are the opposite of what we believe in as Americans, where every voice matters. But to them, there's only one voice, theirs.
It's amazing and pretty tragic to think that not only is there division around how we view these protests, but there is also division within the protests.
And just so y'all know, these are the kind of motherfuckers that's tagging buildings, acting like they fucking black and making us look back. Don't fucking do that bullshit. You're putting Black Lives Matter on fucking buildings, tagging, and it's not black people. Don't fucking do that bullshit. Straight up.
Hey, don't do that.
See, then look.
Don't do that. Please don't do that. Please.
I want you to know this is not...
This is a video of two black women who are confronting two women who are not black, who are spray painting a Starbucks during a protest.
It's not about them. It is not about them.
In the final act of this episode, I kind of lost my grip as the host of this podcast and fully became the son of my parents. And this is kind of the point where I am just fully engaging in a disagreement with my dad. So I think it's important for you guys to know that, but there are some interesting things that came out of that, so I wanted to share them. Let's, I guess, pivot to the president and... You know, I have to say that the president, you know, you guys raised me Christian, right?
Yeah.
While I no longer am Christian, I do appreciate those values. Mom,
you
gave Dad such a look.
What are you if you're not Christian?
I would say I'm an atheist. I just don't necessarily know if I see any clear evidence towards any specific religion.
Okay.
But I was pretty attached to the idea of Christ and the selflessness and the humility, and that, you know, Christ would spend a lot of time with the poorest people in society and people who were in very vulnerable and somewhat controversial circumstances, right?
Yeah, it's called sin.
Stone her! Stone her!
Master, what should we do? This woman has been caught in the act of adultery.
This is a clip from the British film Jesus of Nazareth. I watched this movie a few different times when I was a kid, and I just really remember being affected by it.
We want to know your opinion.
Yes, tell us. Is it right to kill her?
He among you who is without sin, let him cast the first stone.
And I'm curious why you guys, as Christians, are drawn to someone like President Trump.
It's like we said at the beginning, John. Somebody's lying. Who is it? Are they lying to you or are they lying to us? Somebody's lying. They're not telling the truth. And people are being deceived.
When I vote for a president, I'm not looking for a spiritual leader. I'm looking for the person to make the policies, push for the policies and legislature that I want to happen in my country. And first and foremost is abortion.
I hear you, and I appreciate the point about abortion, Mom. I think that's a good point of why the Republican Party really aligns with your value as a Christian. But Dad, do you think that Donald Trump embodies the spirit of Christ in how he behaves as a human?
Well, John, I can't, that kind of a question is difficult to answer. He upholds Christian values that I value. He speaks up for them. So I honor that. I don't hear it coming from any Democrat. I haven't heard it from a Democrat in 20 years.
So it is only because Jesus conquered his own anguish, conquered his fear, that we're able to celebrate the resurrection.
A big part of this anxiety in this moment right now that I feel, and this fear that I feel, is because of the leadership in the world. And I fear that this current president, Trump, I don't feel that he is leading. I feel like he's pulling the worst out of us. In these last 2 weeks, was there ever a moment where he said, let's all come together and let's all
be peaceful? Well, yeah. You won't hear it on CNN, and you won't hear any of that stuff on the public broadcasting.
I understand the pain that people are feeling. We support the right of peaceful protesters, and we hear their pleas.
So, and he gave a fabulous speech that day, but I don't think very many people heard it.
It's tough,
John,
to not want to argue, because I just don't. It's so hard for me to believe that you guys think really deep in your souls that he's a good person.
Yeah, I do. I think he is a good person. You want me to say it? He's a good person.
I do too.
Yeah, he is.
I do too.
I feel like Christ is the reason that you guys chose to be Christians. And Christ went into the temple when he thought that things were corrupt.
Stop it!
And he turned over the tables and he yelled and he displayed anger at what he thought was unjust.
This is a house of prayer!
He's a fool, we must stone him to death!
And you have turned it into a den of thieves!
And he spoke up against, you know, the powers that existed at that time. Do you see any of Christ in the protesters?
No, I'll say I don't. I don't. I listen to them. I listen to what they say. Everybody's mad. Yeah, we all agree that George Floyd was killed. That's undisputable. But they go on and they go on and they go on. And like, so? This is the world. What do you expect? We don't live in the garden. We don't live where God lives. There's no justice here. You can find temporary justice. People should be arrested, but they're not being. Justice is the left, I'm going to say it, the left is throwing that out too because they don't believe in justice. We're headed for total anarchy, and I'm afraid you won't have a place to raise your kids because the world is going to be total chaos. But I would want justice, and the only place I am going to find it is in the kingdom of God. That's the only place.
I don't mean to offend you, but I want to respectfully be honest with you. It doesn't resonate with me as a truth that there is anything after when we die. And that brings all the more urgency to my mind and to my heart when I want to see justice and joy and equality and meaning play out in this life. That's why I would love to get to a place where we can be in the same reality again. before.
Well, if you don't believe in a God, there's no way we can ever get into the same reality.
That ain't going to happen.
Because, I mean, God is everything to us. That's the reason we wake up. That's the reason we make our decisions. That's the reason we will never turn our back on you.
Yeah.
God is love.
I'm sorry that I don't know where you got that. I have no idea where darkness entered your heart. And I'm sorry. I have to. It is ultimately darkness, John. Do you see the harm that comes when you just give in?
But I would say the same thing. Do you see the harm that comes when you just give up? When you give up on this, you give up on this current reality and you say there justice can't be done. Justice can't, you can't find justice.
I don't give up on it. I just don't expect it.
We can't dwell on it. We have to vote for the people that are going to make the change.
Let the Black community solve their problems. They don't want you to solve their problems.
But I think what's happening right now is they are trying to do that. I think what we're witnessing is Black political, a political movement that is rooted in Black activists trying to take control. And what you're saying may be happening in front of your very eyes. And I would just hope that you'd be more receptive to it and less dismissive of it.
John, we've been watching it for 30 years before you were born. We were watching it. This story goes way, way back.
And that does it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope we didn't jump around too much in that episode and you were able to kind of thread the needle with me. And if not, no worries. I tried my best. But thank you guys very, very much for listening. And I want to thank my mom and dad for participating in this discussion. Even though we disagree about many things, I love you guys and I miss you. I have not seen you in several months. And that is a painful thing that we are going through and that a lot of families are going through during this time. And I think the question that I want to leave you with is, what story are you living in? And what story do you want to tell? Until next time, over and out.